So the lower limit is about 115 GeV, which is more or less set by the kinematics of LEPT2. So I think it's fair to say that we can treat the Higgs boson theory as a very good one, the standard model of Higgs boson theory, essentially accommodating all data that we know of from collider physics. Now, why would I say the Higgs boson is fragile? Well, there's several reasons. One is that the mechanism of electroweak symmetry breaking is still unknown. It is a major question mark in our field, what really causes it. If you have a background in condensed matter physics, you know that some simple Landau-Ginzburg model is just a silly effective field theory. And that's essentially what we have in the standard model Higgs sector. It's hard to believe that such a simple thing that carries the burden of everything will be the final story of electroweak symmetry breaking and mass generation. So the standard view on top of that is that naturalness, fine-tuning, hierarchy solutions require a rich collection of beyond the standard model states to stabilize the weak scale. And you can even throw in some physics reasons of dark matter and so on, why people want to extend the weak scale. Obviously, these new ideas can affect Higgs boson predictions. If you have new states that are the accompany the Higgs boson and help make it stable, those new states can run in loops. They can contribute to Higgs boson production rate changes and Higgs boson decay changes. That's quite an obvious thing and has been greatly studied in the literature. And I find them very interesting and have done that work myself. However, this standard new physics kinds of approach is not something I want to discuss today, even though I think that certainly contributes to the fragility thesis of the talk. If you have new things in the spectrum, then you change Higgs boson phenomenology. Instead, I would like to take an approach which is a reduced philosophical approach, as I would call it. And I will perhaps sound a little extremist in this point of view. And you can soften it in your own mind if you like. It will work if you soften the viewpoint. So the reduced philosophical point is that the standard model with Higgs boson is the full explanation of electroweak symmetry breaking in standard model particle masses. It is the full sort of dynamics, nothing else up to a very high scale is relevant. And any extra states or interactions that exist in the low energy spectrum are there not because of our perceived philosophical problems to solve them, like naturalness and fine tuning, but rather just because it is just happens to be there, somewhat of an accident. So let's just stipulate this point of view for the purposes of this talk. Of course, you can take a less extremist approach. I consider this a reduced philosophical approach, is how I talk about it. But these ideas that I will speak about can be on top of your favorite model. So if you have your favorite theory of beyond the standard model physics that you just do not want to part with, then some of these ideas will carry forth. So given that, which is, in the CERN lunchroom, there can be pessimistic people who wonder, are we going to find things? Supersymmetry or extra dimensions or so on. If we delete that from our consideration, why then would we expect more stuff to happen at the weak scale? Of course, the standard model is really just merely a description of the particles that make up our body. It's really fundamentally what the standard model is. Now, of course, the standard model has these extra copies, second generation and third generation, but they're just copies of things that make up our body. And these, I think it's a human-centric point of view to think that all of nature is stuff that's just our body is made out of. This picture here is of Copernicus, monument of Copernicus. And of course, we learned a long time ago from him and others that being human-centric just never pays off. So why would it be at our scale if we said there's new stuff that has nothing to do with solving our philosophical problems, nothing to do with our bodies and copies of things in our bodies? Why would we think that there's new stuff? And one answer is of course, why not? So that's an obvious answer. I'm not sure if that's sufficient. But I think a better answer is that there is a definite scale in nature whose origin we do not understand. I think that's a really key point to all of this. We are explorers of this scale, and we really haven't gone there yet. We haven't gone to the weak scale because we don't know what the dynamics behind electroweak symmetry breaking and mass generation. Now, I think that there's no strong reason to believe that the Standard Model is alone at that mass scale. In fact, there can be reasons, if we started thinking more deeply, there can be reasons to suspect that there are other sectors that are associated with that mass scale. So as Hamlet said to Horatio, there are certainly more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in our philosophy. So let's think about what manifestations there would be at the LHC for stuff that's not related to our philosophies. So this diagram up here is the, if you didn't recognize it, it's the space of all possibilities. And there's a little oval in there that's currently motivated theory space. So that's what most theory conferences worry about, is what's in that upper oval. And in the lower oval is what most experimental conferences are worried about. Now, what I am going to talk about today, I'm not sure which part of which oval that should be in or if it overlaps. I tend to think that it overlaps in those ovals, but most importantly, it's in the LHC probes oval. I think that there are ways to see these new worlds and these hidden sectors, as I will describe a bit, through LHC probes. So you can be pessimistic and still discover lots of interesting things at the LHC. My definition of a hidden world and a hidden sector is a hidden world or hidden sector is a collection of non-standard model states that have no charge under any standard model gauge group. So keep that definition in mind. No charges. Now, of course, that's it's a very workhorse type definition, a very precise definition of what a hidden sector is. It doesn't necessarily correspond with all other definitions of hidden sector and hidden worlds that are given in the literature, but it's the one that I will use today. There's related work in phenomenology and subsequent work by Strassler and Zurich on hidden valley theories, which are very similar in ways. Pott and Wilczek on Higgs portal, which they are distinguished by having dreamed up quite a nice name for this. And more distant related, just somewhat related, is the unparticle stuff that you've heard about. So what are the challenges of finding new worlds, things that are not charged under standard model gauge groups, new things that have different characteristics? The challenge is that most of the interactions of the standard model are renormalizable dimension four interactions. That saturates the dimensionality of the Lagrangian before additional suppressing non-renormalizable operator cutoffs need to be introduced. So typically, any new states of this hidden sector type that you would want to add to the standard model would have to be coupled in a non-renormalizable operator way, as I've described in this bottom equation. You have some gauge invariant standard model operator that you need to attach this hidden sector operator with. And since almost all of the operators of the standard model saturate dimensionality, you need 1 over some cutoff to a power in order to make up the proper dimensionality of this interaction between standard model and hidden sector. So if you want to find a hidden sector through operators like this, you have to be somewhat lucky that you're very close to that cutoff scale. Because as you go below it, it doesn't take too far below that scale before you see nothing. So that is the challenge, the typical challenge of non-renormalizable operator phenomenology. So an obvious question, I think, is to ask, what are the relevant operators in the standard model? And for our purposes, there are two that are nice to explore. Two relevant operators of dimension two, so they're below dimension four. They give the opportunity to connect hidden sector physics with standard model physics at the renormalizable level. And these are, I think, the two best operators to think about. The first operator is the hypercharged field strength tensor, B mu nu. That is unique to U1 field theories that the field strength tensor is gauge invariant all by itself. Non-abelian field strength tensors are not. So this is just hypercharged, B mu nu. And the second operator of interest and relevance is the standard model Higgs boson mass squared operator. And that is unique among all standard model states in that it is has dimension less than 4, it is gauge invariant, and it is Lorentz invariant. So the Higgs boson is a very special beast within the standard model because of that property. And therefore, one can expect to be able to probe hidden sector physics through that operator in a little bit more efficient ways than other methods and other connections to standard model states. So the most simple, I think, non-trivial hidden world that takes advantage of both of those operators is a hidden sector abelian Higgs model. So that is simply a complex scalar that is charged under some additional U1 X symmetry, let's call it. And that's it. That's all you have. Now, I can add a lot more things to it to make life more complicated and make the graphs more complicated and so on. But just as the simplest idea that can exploit these two relevant operators of the standard model to connect into the hidden sector, the hidden world, this is the simplest case. The Lagrangian is very simple. It is the standard model Lagrangian, and then it's the simple Lagrangian associated with this extra U1 field. So x mu nu, and that first equation is just the kinetic term for the extra U1 field. And in that purple bubble is the kinetic mixing, gauge invariant, dimension 4 kinetic mixing between the x U1 and hypercharge U1. The second line is the Higgs boson Lagrangian. There's the standard model Higgs, kinetic terms, and self-interactions. And of course, there's the hidden sector field, phi sub h, which you can write down the kinetic terms, its self-interactions, its mass term. And then, in the purple box, is the very special interaction at the renormalizable level between the standard model Higgs field and the hidden sector Higgs field. And it's these two simple operators that can wreak absolute havoc on Higgs boson physics, both positively and negatively, as we will see. And this is quite generic, and there can be sort of an infinite number of hidden sectors that will mimic this kind of phenomenological description and the effects on the Higgs sector. The gauge fields, of course, are no longer in a canonical kinetic basis, so you need to rotate. And upon rotation, you find that the X boson, and this is one, there's an infinite number of ways to rotate this, of course, but the most convenient way to do it, you find that this X boson has an interaction that's quite small with the standard model states because of the kinetic realignment. And it is proportional to the small kinetic mixing between the two. And typically, if you were to look at explicit examples of this, the kinetic mixing would be a loop level down, typically. So 10 to the minus 3 or something. So you have this small coupling of the hidden sector state now to the standard model states through kinetic mixing. Same with the Higgs sector, although you do not necessarily expect it to be a really small coupling in the Higgs sector. There are three ingredients you need in order for the standard model Higgs to mix with this hidden sector state. The three ingredients are that the standard model has to have a VEV. Of course, that's a check mark. The standard model Higgs does have a VEV to give mass to things. The other field must have a VEV. So that's the C parameter in that purple bubble. And they must interact. There must be an interaction in the Lagrangian, which we posited at the earlier slide, which is kappa. So the mixing is proportional to those three factors combined, plus some normal dimension two matrix mixing factors, and you can get an order one mixing. There's really no trouble getting an order one mixing between the Higgs sector of one theory and the Higgs sector of another theory. Now, if you did have an order one mixing between the states, precision electroweak is something that you should think about. And at leading order, precision electroweak fits to for the Higgs boson are logarithmically sensitive to its mass. Now, if you have two Higgs bosons, one of which is a singlet under the standard model, the other being the standard model Higgs, you split apart this logarithm into two trigonometric pieces, a cosine squared times the log of one mass times a sine, plus a sine squared times the log of the second mass. And to leading order, this needs to be less than what was fit for by the precision electroweak analyses at left. And so it needs to be less than about 1.9. It is relatively easy to get high mass Higgs fields if the mixing is small. If the mixing goes to zero, the second Higgs can be arbitrarily high mass. If the mixing is 0.1, it can be greater than a TeV. If the mixing is a full 50%, it really should be the geometric mean of the two Higgs bosons should be less than about 200 GeV. So depending on how much they mix, you get a different mass. Everything that I will talk about today in the remaining minutes are completely consistent with precision electroweak bounds on Higgs sector. Now, there are two paths to LHC discovery of the Higgs sector that would somewhat uniquely demonstrate that you have an extra hidden sector Higgs field mixing in with the standard model at this level. The two paths are narrow trans TeV Higgs boson signal. So this is a Higgs boson with a mass greater than a TeV, which I will speak a little bit more about. And of course, heavy Higgs decays into light Higgs bosons. And of course, there's overlap of that phenomenon with other ideas in the literature. But on the first one, there's not as much, and I will try to explain why. So in the third column, we have several benchmark points that we looked at, tried to do some theory estimates of the phenomenology of it. But in the third column, we have one particular model which we can describe here in the next couple of minutes. The mixing between the Higgs states is small. It's 1/10, sine squared of the mixing angle between the two Higgs, 1/10. The light Higgs boson is 120 GeV, consistent with precision electroweak, no trouble. Consistent with direct bounds as well. The heavy Higgs is over a TeV. So this is in the trans-TeV region. And of course, a standard model Higgs boson, a trans-TeV region, is nonsensical. Its width is naively computed as much greater than its mass. So it's very rarely even talked about to think about discovering a Higgs boson above a TeV scale. And in this particular case, the Higgs decay to two lighter Higgses is small, and it's subdominant compared to the Higgs decays into vector bosons. The Higgs decays into vector bosons actually dominates. I will say a few more words about that in a minute. So Bowen, Tsui, and I did some basic simulations using MadGraph. We used the techniques that have been outlined in the Atlas and CMS TDRs, and also a paper by Zeppenfeld. And this is not a low luminosity option discovery. This is a high luminosity phase analysis with this small mixing angle. Even though the solid line is a signal and it looks spectacular compared to the backgrounds of the standard model after various cuts of PTs being greater than some critical values and the ET being greater than critical values, you see in the upper right-hand corner in purple that the number of signal events between 1 and 1.3 TeV is only 13 after 100 inverse femtobarns, and it's 7.5 after for background. So this takes a tremendous amount of luminosity to see this, but I think it is one demonstration of the utility of a high luminosity phase LHC. This is just one example out of many of why we would want a high luminosity LHC program. Now, this is just one particular mode out of many. There are other modes for example, Higgs decay disease and so on, that one could add on and maybe get more significance. That was just one node. This is in great contrast to supersymmetry analyses of the second Higgs boson. So you might have thought heavy Higgs boson, trans-TeV Higgs boson, supersymmetry has two Higgs boson states, two CP-even Higgs boson states. Surely they have looked at the heavy Higgs decays and the heavy Higgs phenomenology in that case. And indeed they have. However, the decays into the gauge bosons have not been considered much in that case for the simple reason that the standard model of the MSSM has two SU2 doublets. They're lined in a particular way such that when the superpartner supersymmetry breaking mass gets higher, you decouple very rapidly the heavy Higgs states to vector bosons. They decouple like 1/1 the SUSY breaking mass to the 4th power to 0. They decouple very rapidly. And almost all analyses are either decays into superpartners or, even more importantly for much of the analyses, decays into fermions, which do not decouple. They decouple to tangent beta and 1/tangent beta factors. So the trans-TeV Higgs boson discovery and search in the vector boson channel is somewhat neglected and is something that I think would be a unique discovery associated with hidden sector fields. Higgs decay to lighter Higgs. Of course, if you have more than one Higgs boson, immediate question and immediate consideration would be the heavy Higgs boson decaying into those two lighter Higgs bosons. So here is a case in the purple box, purple oval, of a very heavily mixed Higgs boson sector. The mixing is full 50% between each Higgs. We have the light Higgs of 115 GeV and the heavy Higgs of 300 GeV. You do the geometric mean of that, which is really what the precision electroweak feels in that case, and you're below precision electroweak bounds. And for this particular setup, the heavy Higgs decay into lighter Higgs has a branching fraction of 1/3. This is, I think, a very important final state, because in this scenario, the light Higgs boson discovery potential in all standard model channels is suppressed by 50%. So if you thought it took a long time to find 115 GeV Higgs boson at the LHC, double that time, if not more, to try to find the Higgs boson in this case with a heavily mixed state. And as we know, this is somewhat of an old slide from ATLAS that's being updated continuously. As we know, with 30 MBOS femtobarns, 115 GeV Higgs boson has a significance of not too much greater than 5. And therefore, we need to think about other discovery modes. And the other discovery mode in this case is Higgs to lighter Higgs. And in this case, one can even perhaps find both Higgs bosons simultaneously. So a 300 GeV Higgs boson, you produce, just like the standard model, through glue loops. The total rate is down by a factor of 1/2, but that's okay, because it can decay into to these two lighter Higgs bosons and give a signal of 2 photons and 2 B quarks, which we then studied in the context of what Lichtervoss et al. Did about 10 years ago in a similar analysis in supersymmetry. And what we found is that after about 30 inverse femtobarns using similar cuts, that one can have a total background rate of about 8.2 events or something on a signal rate, which is 24 events with 1 B tag, and 12 events on essentially 0 background when done right with 2 tags. So this is a 30 inverse femtobarn type of analysis, which is well within the range of the first phase of the LHC. And both Higgs bosons would be found in that case. Now, something extremely important to keep in mind about all of Higgs boson phenomenology, which I think amplifies the message that I'm giving today, is that the Higgs boson is accidentally light. It is a strange feature of nature that the VeV is so much higher than the heaviest decay state allowed. I'm referring to the Higgs boson that's in the light range that's preferred by precision electroweak. So this graph is of the Higgs standard model Higgs boson width divided by sort of a natural width that a scalar would have if it had order one couplings to a light object. And you see that it's orders of magnitude more narrow than sort of a typical order one decay would be, all the way up to 160, 170 GeV. So the Higgs boson is a highly susceptible, fragile object because of this as well. There are many sources of potential additional decays. One slide just to flash here is that if you have states that it can decay to which are invisible, they do not decay within the detector, if they are kinematically accessible, they are likely to dominate the branching fraction of the Higgs boson. This has been studied for many years, the invisible decay width. And the most recent FINO analysis of this, I believe, was David Diazal et al. A few years ago. And they find that the Z plus invisible Higgs production cross-section is a useful one to look at. I just wanted to flash that in case somebody had a question about invisible widths. OK, so one of the last transparencies I'll have is on an opportunity within this context. The opportunity is now going back to the Z prime sector. So I have this extra U1 that kinetic mixed with a small factor, a small kinetic mixing. If the kinetic mixing is less than 10 to the minus 3 or 10 to the minus 4, which is somewhat natural, the coupling to the standard model states is such that you will never see it at any experiment that has been done to this date or that will be done at the LHC. And likely not in my lifetime, if its kinetic mixing is less than 10 to the minus 4, about. However, through the Higgs sector, there is an opportunity to find this, because if you are somehow able to make that Z prime state, it will decay, and it will decay promptly from the standpoint of the detector, as long as that kinetic mixing is greater than 10 to the minus 8. And 10 to the minus 8 is a rather too small of a number for expectations of kinetic mixing generically. So small kinetic mixing, Higgs boson can decay with order one factors to light Z primes, because that is only accomplished through Higgs mixing. There's no special kinetic mixing associated with that. So Higgs, standard model Higgs, mixed with exotic Higgs decays into Z primes. And the Z prime says, oh, my goodness, I'm a very narrow object. I don't want to decay to anything. But I have to decay, and it decays into standard model states for leptons. And we did some analysis of this and found that Tevatron and LHC will do a great job of finding this if it's kinematically accessible, except for the caveat that ATLAS will not find this with a current analysis, because they do search for Higgs decay to ZZ in four leptons, so they have a four lepton search. But part of the analysis is that two of the leptons must reconstruct the Z. This will be lost in that, because these Z primes are not necessarily reconstructing the Z max. CMS, I'm not sure. I had conflicting reports from two experimentalists on CMS, but I will going to find that out. But it's something to keep in mind. Okay, and this is just emphasizing that point with the graph of the branching fractions to various final state standard model states to look for. And with one inverse Compton bar at the LHC, if it's kinematically accessible, you will find it. So that's the good news in that. Okay, conclusions. I think it's very reasonable to imagine hidden worlds, hidden sectors that interact with the Higgs boson at the renormalizable level, in particular the Higgs boson. It really is a portal to these new objects. Many opportunities for this at the LHC to find evidence for it. In both the early phase, if there happens to be very large kinetic mixing, you'd find that. Also through Higgs to Z prime with small kinetic mixing. And or finding evidences for these things in the high luminosity phase. I think both early phase and high luminosity phase, there's a rich program to pursue for this. And finally, conclude with the statement that this favored light Higgs boson for precision electroweak is a very fragile creature. It's easily knocked about by your favorite physics models and also new stuff that doesn't necessarily have to do with any of the philosophy or your models that you come up with. I think that there's an excellent chance that Higgs boson phenomenology is going to be much more complicated and confusing and interesting than we probably suspect. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Questions?
I'm trying to understand the philosophy that you're describing. So there's a number of terms or fields that are not introduced in your analysis, and if you explain them to me, maybe I'll understand better the philosophy. So for example, you were looking for relevant operators that are gauge invariant, made out of standard model fields, and you could have taken the lepton doublet and the Higgs doublet and make a gauge invariant operator out of those. And it's a dimension 5/2 operator, so it's still relevant, and I can certainly couple it to a neutral spinner from your hidden sector.
Right.
So why is that left out?
That
would help me.
That's called the Dirac mass for the right-handed neutrino.
So why is it left out?
Oh, it's not. It's perfectly within this framework. I consider the standard model as a seesaw mechanism with a Dirac neutrino mass, which is exactly this operator. It's a Higgs lepton. And of course, Higgs lepton is not Lorentz invariant. You add a fermion on it. It's a neutral fermion, which is the right-handed neutrino. And it's consistent with being a Dirac mass for a right-handed neutrino. I consider that as part of the standard model.
And the other direction is the choice of fields that you made for your hidden sector. You took scalars that are charged under this new U1, but you could have taken additional scalars that are just completely neutral and have, for example, a cubic interaction. What determines these choices?
Nothing particularly determined the choice. I wanted to illustrate what I mentioned at the beginning was I wanted to illustrate how both operators could simultaneously be of interest. And the most effective way of doing that is this hidden sector abelian Higgs model, which then connects in with the U1 mixing and the Higgs mixing. And I flashed very fast because I didn't have much time, but I flashed, in fact, a case of a singlet that was a pure real singlet that had no VEV, which then contributes sort of one extra aspect of the phenomenology that I did not cover that I wanted to say. And that was the visible width. So many of these other ideas will just contribute to an invisible width. And the phenomenology can be exhausted rather quickly by just these very basic choices.
OK, one more question. If that's not the case, we reconvene 4:05. 4:05, we go to the coffee break now. And after the coffee break, we'll have Jim Peebles speaking about